Welcome to On the Table with Ashley Gould, a podcast where I explore ways in which we can lead more fulfilling lives and amplify human connection by communicating with less judgment and more respect. It's such a pleasure to welcome Dr. Jennifer Siegel, a board-certified dermatologist and founding member of the Metropolitan Dermatology Institute in Houston, Texas, to On the Table. Through her established clinical practice, Dr. Siegel provides scientifically proven treatments in the fields of skin health and skin aging. She is known for her advanced techniques in cosmetic dermatology, including soft tissue fillers, the neuromodulators Botox and Dysport, chemical peels, and laser treatments. Dr. Siegel is also a friend from high school. So while I will try my best to stick with Dr. Siegel for today's discussion, I might lapse into Jenny, which is what I called her during high school. It is wonderful to have friends that span the years, and it's even better when they happen to be experts in an area so on my mind as I am peering over at 50 next year. Welcome to the podcast, Dr. Siegel.
Thank you for having me. And it is a little strange to have you call me Dr. Siegel, but it's okay with me if you call me Jenny. Since we are such, I won't say old friend, longtime friends, and whatever you're comfortable with is fine with me.
Okay, excellent. Well, I like to start with just a little bit of getting to know you. So if you could tell us a little bit about where you grew up and what you think led you to the field of dermatology, that would be wonderful.
Okay, so I was born in Hawaii and lived there until I was 14 when I moved to San Francisco, which is where my mother and her family were from, are from. And that's when I met Ashley, right when I went to University High School in San Francisco, and I moved from Hawaii to San Francisco. And Ashley was one of the first people that I met there, which I'm sure we'll have more things to say about in the podcast ahead. But after that, I went to the University of Pennsylvania and followed that with a year of doing clinical research in New York, and then did medical school and residency at Duke. I think that everything led me to become a dermatologist. My love of medicine in general, which is because I love learning and people and giving back. And dermatology, because it really incorporates everything. So the skin, you know, manifests every kind of disease. It has the field has a very large surgical component, which I really enjoy. And I have a wonderful mentor who guided me in the direction, Kathy Fields, who is one of the founders of ProActive, and she was is still in San Francisco and is a dear friend and mentor. So I had great guidance. I would also say it's also my love of balancing work and family. Family is my love language. I always knew I wanted to be a mother, and dermatology is one of the few fields in medicine that allows you to be good at being a doctor and hopefully good at being a mom at the same time. So I always knew I wanted that. And it's been such a gift to get to have that wonderful balance in this field. I think they feed each other.
Amazing. Thank you. Can you share a few things that you loved to do as a child?
Well, I love the ocean and the water. And Ashley actually sent me a very funny picture of us getting too much sun. Where was that? Was that in Hawaii or was that in California?
Not sure. I think California.
It was okay. But yes, certainly, you know, being in the ocean, any kind of, you know, water sports. I was a swimmer, and definitely, and I know Ashley shares this, a sense of aesthetics and art, you know, being artistic, whether it's photography or, you know, any form of art. I really enjoyed that. And I guess I'll go back to time with family and friends.
Yeah, amazing. Okay, let's talk a little bit about your expertise. Can you tell us what you think the most prevalent misconceptions about skincare are, particularly when it comes to skin aging?
Well, that I It is such a good question, and it's a pretty long answer. I think, there are so many misconceptions out there right now, because a lot of information is being provided by sources that, you know, maybe not have the most expertise and also have a vested interest in a certain outcome, which is usually selling something to someone. So I will say, as a general, the general blanket statement, the misconception is that we need to be buying lots of things and doing lots of things and using multi-step routines. And there's certainly high yield, wonderful things to be doing, but the volume is not necessary. And the price is not always necessary. And we can talk more about that. But so I think that's probably the largest misconception right now, is that we need to be doing more, and at a younger age even.
Well, that is music to my ears, because I have never been so wonderful at my skincare routine. I remember the first skincare products I got were Clinique. They had like the yellow moisturizer and the blue astringent and something else. And my mom took me to get those things. But the truth is that I'm pretty good, and I care much more as I'm aging. I care about cancer risk. I care about just preservation of skin tone and all of these things. But simplifying is music to my ears, because it's hard for me to really get behind. Like, I have to do all of these different things. So do you have advice on fundamentals that we shouldn't skip? And does that change if you're younger versus older?
Oh, absolutely. And I think probably this ties back into why I also became a dermatologist. My mother, I actually lost my mother to skin cancer, to melanoma. So that is something near and dear to my heart, both in my clinical practice and in research and also education that I've done. So without a doubt, the most important thing to do is sunscreen. And there are many great options to choose from now. I tend to prefer the mineral-based sunscreens, because they're good for sensitive skin and they're a great, you know, physical reflective block. It's better to have a little bit of chemical in your sunscreen and still use a sunscreen than not to use a sunscreen at all. That's a common misconception, that the chemicals in sunscreen cause skin cancer. They don't, but we know that harmful UV rays can. So that's the most important thing to do, and do young. And, you know, as you reminded me in that wonderful picture you sent, we were not doing that at a young age. I think one of the nice things is, I think people are starting to use sunscreen younger now, even if for aesthetic reasons, great. If the outcome is healthy skin, fantastic. So pretty and healthy skin, that's a win-win. Yeah. And sunscreen will get you there. You know, the rest of the routine depends on the skin type and one's age. So in general, a common misconception, I think, and you talked about the different toners and things like that, and I loved it. I think, you know, we all did. Remember, we used Sea Breeze and Biore strips and that St. Ives apricot scrub. The difference between then and now is that there are just so many more options now. And I don't know that that's a good thing. I think we basically, like, you were nodding your head when I said every single one of those products. Like, those were what we had to play with. And now I really think that especially younger patients, certainly more mature patients as we are, but, you know, younger patients who are just being barraged with so many products, it's absolutely overwhelming. I'm a skincare expert and I'm overwhelmed. I mean, it's really hard to keep track. And I actually think that, in my opinion, I've seen more of this recently. I think it's not good for mental health. I've seen young, beautiful girls afraid to have a pore or a line or a wrinkle. And that's just not where we are. I mean, that's partially due to social media and filters and things like that, but it's also due to just the onslaught of marketing that mostly women, but men too, are faced with. And it's very confusing. And I think that it actually induces anxiety. And I think that industry is preying on that anxiety, and the quality is not always there. So I I have certain brands and products that I use and recommend and live by. I like a nice, gentle skin routine. It does not need to be fancy. I love the line Aven, which is just over the counter in Europe. And here it's over the counter in some places, but either way, the price point is over the counter. It's all for sensitive skin. So when I have sensitive skin, so that tends to be what I recommend. A nice gentle cleanser and a nice gentle moisturizer to preserve the overall quality and barrier function of the skin. So we remember that our skin is our barrier against the world. So we don't want to strip it or scrub it too much, or, you know, we want to take care of it. We want to nourish and protect it. So at the very, you know, just to start, a gentle cleanser, a gentle moisturizer, a Aven Dove bar soap, not the whole fragrance line now, but that's the other problem, is that trusted lines, trusted brands are now expanding their SKUs too, again, just to sort of, you know, increase their sales, and that's understandable. But I think as a practitioner, I'm very mindful of what I recommend. And I think for anyone as a consumer, there should be a pretty high level of suspicion. So just stay away from fragrances and you'll be fine. Gentle cleanser, gentle moisturizer, and sunscreen, and that's win-win. As we get older, it's nice to have something that increases the cell turnover. As we get older, we hold on to the outer layer of our skin more, so it's more prone to looking dull, or, you know, and that's when fine lines and pore size and things like that can be, you know, more apparent. So something that gently increases cell turnover, something in the very mild end of a Retin A. It does not need to be a very harsh Retin A. Many are. And so it's a misconception to think that we need to be red and peely and miserable for it to be doing its job. It's better to use something gentler on a regular basis. There are great options. Aven makes one called Retinol. Differin is now over the counter, which is fantastic. That's one option. Or gentle alpha hydroxy acids, you know, and there are many to choose from. And I'd be happy to elaborate if you'd like, but the list is too long. But the basic idea is just to induce a very gentle turnover of the skin. That typically is at night. So it's very easy to remember. So in the morning, so we cleanse in the morning, at night. In the morning, we protect with the sunscreen. And in the evening, we correct, which is just that gentle exfoliation, which is good for anti-aging, evening out skin tone, brightening the skin, making it look dewy.
Amazing. And we will put, we'll get some more of these names from you, and we'll put everything in the show notes so people can refer back. That's so helpful. I had a bunch of questions that I don't need to ask because you just answered them. And I love that we can simplify and sort of focus on sort of morning and evening routine. I think that's wonderful. Okay, shifting gears a little bit, and I now live at elevation, so skin cancer is a much bigger concern to me. As a doctor, are there top skincare signs that indicate you should see a professional? And what have you learned from years of practice that individuals often ignore but should not ignore?
Oh my goodness. These are good questions, Ashley. They're so broad. I could talk forever. So a skincare routine is important, not just for using sunscreen to protect against skin cancer, but it does encourage us to be more mindful of our skin. And again, there's that balance. We don't want to be overly, you know, critical, but a routine does enable us to be more mindful of our skin and minimizing the background noise by evening out skin tone and texture does have the added benefit of making it easier to detect skin cancers early and more easily. So the basal cell and squamous cell carcinomas are the non-melanoma skin cancers. They are skin cancers that typically don't spread throughout your body and affect your health. But if left untreated, they can just continue to grow and grow. That's cancer cells just don't follow the rules. And they can create larger problems and invade tissue. So it is important to treat those. Melanoma is typically the dark skin cancers, but not always, but typically yes. And that is the kind, that's actually the kind of skin cancer that I lost my mother to. And those can obviously spread throughout your body and affect your health. So what to look for? Basal cell and squamous cell carcinomas are typically, they can be a variety of things, typically red scaly areas that don't heal or a pimple that just doesn't go away. Remember that cancer cells, again, they don't follow the rules and they declare themselves, they'll stick around. So any area that's just not healing is suspect, especially, you know, they really can occur anywhere, but especially in sun exposed areas, like in the altitude, you know, on the face, neck and chest, but they really can occur anywhere. And melanomas are dark typically. And we call it the ABCDs of melanomas. So A is if the mole is asymmetrical. If you cut it down the middle and it's not the same on both sides. B is border, if there's an irregular border instead of nice, round, even, that more that benign moles show. C is color, so dark black or purpley black is the typical color of melanoma, or even just a darker brown. And D is diameter, which is the size of the mole or the dark area. 6 millimeters or the size of a pencil eraser is sort of our benchmark. And E is evolving. So A, B, C, D, E is evolving. If any existing moles have changed in any of those ways, symmetry, border, color, size, then they should come off. And that is the time to see a doctor. Well, actually, you know, and this includes you, Ashley, everyone should be getting a skin check once a year.
So I'm doing that. I was actually just going to ask that. I started doing that moving to altitude. So I do a skin check once a year. And I know now that they are sort of, you know, there's certain things they're watching. But I was also told when I went, you know, when I go to my appointment that I need to be watching, you know, every month, really, I should do a check because things can change really quickly and become dangerous quickly. So is that also what you recommend to your patients?
Yes, I always say it's just, you know, take a look in the mirror, you know, at least once a month on your own and just kind of look all over. There's something called the ugly duckling rule. I would say not ugly, just different, that if there's an area, if there's one that doesn't match the other, if there's one mole, one freckle, one red area that just doesn't match what is going on with the rest of the body, then we should take it off. And so that's a good way to, you know, I always encourage my patients to just take a good look front and back if they can, or if they can have, you know, someone else take a look from the back, that's fine. But just to notice the places that could be new or just don't match the other ones. And then it is time to, you know, in between the 1 year checks to see a dermatologist. And we routinely do see things popping up very quickly. And we also are seeing them in younger and younger patients.
That was actually going to be my next question, which is, as you know, I have 2 teenage boys and I actually had them start doing an annual check this year. Like, at what age do you suggest people start this annual check?
Well, it really can start earlier, even with their pediatrician. I mean, pediatricians are well-versed in you know, it's usually moles, you know, that younger children present with rather than the basal cell or squamous cell carcinomas that tend to occur later in life. So really initially having a pediatrician just take a good look all over, it should start young, especially if there is a family history of atypical or abnormal moles or of course melanoma. Basal cell and squamous cell carcinomas typically arise later in life. They occur in the setting of sun damage. And that typically evolves and we pay for our sun damage typically 20 to 30 years after the initial insult to the skin. So a very big factor in whether or not one gets basal or squamous cell carcinomas is sun exposure early in life. So it is, you know, the sunburns that we get as kids. And it's completely unfair because when we tan, we pay for it later. And you know, the burns, I guess we can blame on our parents, but yeah, so you pay for it later. So I actually think, you know, sun protection early in life has become much better as well.
Yeah.
And that's great. We want to keep that up. My boys, I will say that you have two teenage boys. And the caveat is that no matter what, even if your mom's a dermatologist, my boys, they like taking their shirts off at a certain point. Sorry, guys, if you're listening to this, but it's true. When they were little, I would put them in these zipped up, covered up SPF 50 things called stinger suits. You got them from Australia and they protected against jellyfish and sun. And they thought they were great. Well, not anymore. Not anymore. So I do my best and try my best to instill a little bit of fear. But, you know, we'll add it to the list of things that we're trying to instill a little bit of fear about in teenage boys.
So. Yeah, we do our best. That is all. Yes. We can. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I'm happy now if I can get them just to put on their face. So we got to start somewhere. Okay. So one of the things that we're trying to shift with on the table is to get each of us to judge less, listen more, and respect each other more. And I know that there are, I'm switching gears a little bit, there are a lot of opinions about Botox, Dysport, laser therapy, and chemical peels. And just to share my own personal story, I remember when I was first considering using Botox, talking to a friend of mine in San Francisco and asking her to not judge me, that I was thinking about getting some Botox because I had these terrible lines right here. And it was really bothering me. And she just started laughing and she told me that she'd been actually using Botox for years. So it made me feel much better, but not everybody is sort of as open about it. And I'm wondering how you talk with your patients about making choices that are right for them and what they should expect out of the treatments. And I would say both physically and mentally. And you talked earlier about sort of like filter face and this anxiety and social pressure. And I think that that comes into it too, sort of like, what are our expectations? Why are we coming in to get these treatments? What do we expect out of them? And what can you do, but what can you also not do because you're not, you know, a psychologist. So it's an interesting area.
Sometimes we are.
Yeah.
I will say, I just want to point out how dramatically the field has changed, even within the last 5 years. And when I started, I was right place, right time. So I got to be there with the best who were, you know, really pioneers in the field. And at that time, the practitioners were mainly, you know, doctors in the core specialties of dermatology, plastic surgery, and facial plastic surgery and ophthalmology. And in all of these fields, all of these techniques, chemical peels and Botox and filler, they're actually on our boards. So we are trained in anatomy and side effects and complications, and as any doctor would be, because these are procedures. So when I was starting out, it was very easy to have that conversation because we were more trusted. And there, you know, as you would trust your doctor to prescribe an antibiotic for you, there was more of a trust. And what has happened now, and again, I understand, you know, I come from a business family, so I understand that these companies want to grow. But what has happened is they now want to grow so much that they actually don't have enough practitioners to continue to scale the sale of their product. So less experienced practitioners, whether it be doctors that aren't trained in these areas of medicine, and they're not all alike. But even, you know, to physician assistants and nurses, and all due respect, I know some great ones, but there is a difference. We're more trained. And even to estheticians, or, you know, it really just depends on your state's laws. So I think the field has changed because the trust of the patient is not there. So there's a higher level of suspicion. There actually should be. There should be now. So I'm in favor of that. The goal of all of this should be to look natural, to look like yourself. It should all be empowering in that regard. To be able to just stay the same and feel fresh. When it ceases to be empowering is when you dramatically alter the way that you look and you become a bit of a spectacle. And that ceases to be empowering because people make fun of it. And yeah. We know that that happens. So I think that, you know, that's where it's turned a bit. And I feel very fortunate to be and to have trained with the people that I trained with, to have an aesthetic eye myself, and fortunately trained it at a great place like Duke. So I am able to have the expertise to deliver that care to my patients and to really, the most important thing, although now, you know, we want to say, don't look in the mirror too much. I find myself saying that, you know, all the time is, you know, don't take so many selfies. Don't look in the mirror too much, but it's really that moment when you wake up in the morning, when you you brush your teeth and you want to look and feel good as you go out on your day, or when you're going out for the evening or to an event or something like that. It should be about confidence and empowerment. The suspicion and, you know, the negative stereotypes are largely because it is just being scaled, I believe, too rapidly. And that's not because of competition. I'm very busy and I love what I do and I get to do what I do, but it is sad for me because these are really wonderful tools, but they're wonderful tools in experienced hands. I think people are being encouraged also, just like with skincare products, to buy the, you know, it's, doctors don't perform their procedures in a consumer-minded manner. At least I don't. None of my mentors do. That's really not the way to train. But in another setting where it's being done for those reasons, then they want to sell as much as they can. As it's really a more commoditized approach to a patient. And that's where it gets very tricky for the patient. And I think that any, you know, insecurity leads to further insecurity, and it's being preyed upon. And that makes me sad as a practitioner. But in experienced hands, these are fantastic tools.
And let me ask you this. I was actually in Paris in January at this show for my company, and I saw this young woman with all of this filler, and it made me so sad. It made her look so much older, actually. So can you talk a little bit about the age that people are sort of taking advantage of these tools, as you say, but maybe for the wrong purposes? And do you have an age limit? You know, when, like, will you not engage with patients under a certain age for some of these tools?
Well, I will say, I started my Botox in my 20s, and I started my filler in my early 30s. That was, you know, I was around it, and thank God I did. I mean, I, again, in experienced hands, and I was in the right, you know, I was with wonderful providers. These are fantastic tools for just staying the same. I wasn't trying to look a different way. I wanted to look refreshed. And, you know, we were also, the field was evolving too. I don't think the pillow face was ever really, really a positive for anyone who, I guess, the higher level providers, but so I don't have a problem with starting young. In fact, I actually think it's a great tool in anti-aging if used appropriately. And so when my, you know, when my patients come to me about it, my general rule is do it when you're ready to do it. Do it when there's an area, just like with you. If there's an area that you're noticing and it's making you feel uncomfortable, then that's the time to do it. But the way that I do my injectables, you know, for example, are we say wade into the water, start with something, you know, a little bit of Botox. And the way that I use my Botox is more for facial shaping. You want to be able to smile. We smile with our eyes. You know, we want expression, but you can still have those expressions softened in a way that is flattering and sometimes even more comfortable. Botox really helps with headaches and clenching teeth and stuff like that. It can be done. So I use it more for, you know, for softening and for facial shaping. So, which is probably a whole other podcast, but yeah. But Botox can be used for lots of wonderful things. And with filler, it's all anatomy. So remember that if if that's not in your background, you are learning this. But a lot of people are learning it in a weekend course. And personally, I learned mine over years and years of watching and learning and, you know, studying. But filler can be used, and that's, I started mine in my early 30s, just to replace volume loss. So in the picture that you sent me, my face is big and round, and that's what happens in high school. And as we get older, we lose volume in our face, bone, muscle, and fat. It just happens. Typically, we like it when our face gets a little less round than it is in high school, but then it turns the corner and we start having shadows that we're more conscious of. And rather than filling those lines, the way that I use filler is to just restore the support. And then you don't look like someone else. You just continue to look like yourself.
Yeah. Okay. Well, this question, I feel like you've answered it a bit, but if you could say one common misconception about your work, what would it be?
Oh, I may have. I think that the most common misconception is that it's vanity. And it's interesting because women are more likely to use that word. Again, I don't think it's vanity. I think all of these tools, all can be used, and I am fortunate enough to get to use them for empowerment and skin health and the overall care of a patient. So
I love it.
I also think, you know, a common misconception, which it's not surprising, is that, you know, it's just a money-making scheme, a money-making operation. Unfortunately, that is outweighing more of, you know, the field these days, but that's really not what it's about. And yeah. And it should be about, you know, empowerment and skin health and well-being.
I love it. Well said. What is one piece of advice you would give to aging women and men?
Don't look on TikTok. I mean, I think that's probably the biggest thing. A lot of what I do is damage control these days. And in addition to, you know, to getting to practice. But I think that women and men should know that skin health and beauty go hand in hand. If you keep your skin healthy, it's going to look better, and that's a win. And being mindful of your skin contributes to your skin health as well. So, yes, there are so many misconceptions out there right now. So, but I think that would be my advice. Is
a good one. It's a good one.
Make it a priority. Don't overdo it. And when you can, I know it's not available to everyone, go to an experienced core physician.
Yeah. Okay. Are there any trends you see emerging in dermatology that you're excited about?
Oh, there's so many. I mean, it's getting better and better. We're getting better, you know, combination therapies are really exciting to me. I think I assume we're speaking about the cosmetic aspect of it. I mean, because there are in all of dermatology, there's such great stuff going on. But combination therapy, we've just gotten much better. When a lot of these things came out, the Botox or filler, it was, wow, there's a line and now there's no line. And that's amazing. Or, wow, there was a wrinkle there. We filled it up. You know, I mean, that was how it started. And it's really evolved to be, you know, how can we just keep looking our best and looking the same? And so the combination therapies that I typically employ are the injectables that I discussed, the toxins and fillers, but also with these wonderful tightening devices that induce us to produce our own collagen in our skin and combat the thinning of our skin that naturally happens over time. So it's really fun to get to play with all those things. They're often off label. But because my colleague and I understand the skin very well, we understand what makes sense and what will work. And that's really been, I think, the combination therapies to just keep looking our best, especially as I reach 50 myself, have been very exciting. I will say, and I know I sound like, I mean, I'll get off my soapbox in a minute. New is not necessarily better. And quality is not there. Sort of like, I don't know, some cars were made better before they decided to make them more cheaply. As the market has grown and become more scaled, this goes for skincare, this goes for the filler products, the toxin products, everything. The quality is not always there. So I am not a latest greatest girl. I always want to know what the new things are, but I'm a tried and true. And then being able to put them together in different ways is very exciting. Safely and effectively is what's exciting for me. But yes, a lot of things are being repackaged as new when they're not, in fact, new. And it's just a different ball game. I think it's very overwhelming, I think, for all patients and women and men alike to sift through it. So beware of always the newest is not necessarily better these days.
I started the On the Table podcast to coincide with and amplify the mission of my brand, Amatand, an elevated everyday tabletop brand with a goal of increasing connectedness among people. Each week, we send our guests a product from our current collection. And this week, Dr. Siegel, you received our red oak cutting board. We focus on three areas in the development of our products. One is how an object is made. Another is how it looks. And the third is how it functions. And we're really excited about how our cutting board met all of these objectives. It took us several design iterations and prototypes to realize our launch cutting board, which is handmade in Indiana of high quality red oak that should last for many years if properly cared for. The key features of the cutting board are the cutouts on the bottom so that you can easily pick it up and move it and set it down. The size, which works seamlessly both as a serving or charcuterie board or as a simple functional cutting board, and the beautiful decorative design along the edges, which includes a movement that you'll see across our glass product line as well. So you've only had the cutting board. Well, you haven't even really had a chance to use it, so I don't really think I can ask you too much about it, but I would say that we would love to get your first impressions, and after you've had some time to use it, we can add in the show notes any thoughts you have. Because we're designing most of our products ourselves, we have the opportunity to evolve them, so we're very, very interested in getting feedback on all of the different elements of the design. So I don't know if you have any initial thoughts, or we can get them later.
Well, I just to go back to our background, because I've known Ashley since we were 14 years old, I am not the least bit surprised that you ended up in an aesthetic field or a field that utilizes your aesthetic gifts, because Ashley, for those of you who don't know, always had the most beautiful handwriting, the most beautiful stationery, the coolest style, and the best entertaining, which your mother, right, was one of the key figures in entertaining in Marin in San Francisco when we were growing up. I still remember our prom party was probably our post prom party that you hosted was probably the prettiest thing I'd ever seen. And also, just given your strong connections with your friends, I can say, because I am one, and of course your family, you're the connection of aesthetics with welcoming people into your home and to giving, and of course that's something that you and I have always shared together. So I knew when you said that it was on its way that it would be fabulous and perfect, and of course it is. And I can't wait to use it. I think it's beautiful, and I love the message of, I love that it's something to be enjoyed, to prepare, be prepared maybe on one's own or with friends, but either way, in a way that is perhaps like meditative and intentional. I guess intentional is the word that I'm that I'm looking for, and I think really describes you so well, and to be shared with a group of family or friends in a way that is beautiful and feels shared at the same time. So, yes, the intentional care and connection to oneself and the people, the important people in your life, I think is absolutely evident in this piece. And thank you. I cannot wait to use it.
Thank you so much. That was so kind. I really appreciate
it. It's true. I only speak the truth. It's really beautiful. I can't wait to see the rest of your products and to see all the wonderful things that you do with your creations and your podcast as well. I'm delighted to be a part of it. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much. Well, we're going to end the episode with 5 questions that we ask each of our guests. So let's start. Okay. As we explore in my brand, Amatande, objects can hold a lot of meaning for us. They can tie us to the past, enable us to enjoy the present moment more, which is where we're really focused with the brand, and they can also take us into the future. Can you share an object from your life, whether you have it or not anymore, that holds a lot of meaning for you, and explain why?
Well, there are many, because with like you, I believe in assigning meaning to things. The most meaningful that I get to wear every day is a bracelet that my mother gave me when I graduated from medical school. And it's one of those Cartier gold bracelets that's really hard to get off. But the inside, she inscribed with Dr. Jenny, love mom. And it's just, I keep that with me. I keep it close to me. I don't take it off. And I always think of her. And I hope that I make her proud in everything that I do. So it's
I got the chills right now. And she is a wonderful person. You're so lucky to have had her in your life, and you still have her with you, which is something, you know, we share, as I lost my father. So, you know, we continue to hold the people that we've lost with us, and take the meaning that they gave us into our lives and share it with others. And that's a beautiful thing. So I love that you have her with you every day. And as often as I can, try to make it a blessing instead of sadness, but sometimes there's sadness too. Okay. So can you share a favorite tradition with us? It could be something from when you're a child or something you do with your boys, or anything in between. It could be a recipe or a family trip or a game you play, really anything at all.
There are so many, because I, again, like you, I believe in tradition and assigning meaning. And it always touches me. And usually it's repetition, you know, with my boys. And you never really know if it's sinking in or not. And it's always touching when they ask for something, a special meal or setting the table in a certain way. I guess, or even something just like saying goodnight. So I say goodnight to them the way that my mother said goodnight to my sister and to me every night, which is goodnight, sweetheart, sweet dreams, see you in the morning. And that's a ritual every night. And even my oldest is at boarding school at Exeter now, and I still say it to him or text it to him if he's around friends on his phone.
That is so sweet. And hopefully it is something that they will do with their families one day.
Yes.
That's wonderful. Okay. Are you in a phase in your life when you enjoy entertaining in your home, and why or why not?
Yes. I always have. I think also on the other end of COVID, we did a lot of that. I love it. I love having people over. I think entertaining, whether one or many, is my love language. I think that actually I've been really lucky in my medical practice. Ashley, you've got to come see the office. I've really just created a practice that's like that. I try to make it welcoming and fun and beautiful and enjoyable. And so it's lovely. And I see you are on your way to having the combination of personal and professional. experience in the same way.
So let me ask you a question about entertaining. Is it ever, and I think I know the answer to this for you, but is it ever daunting to you, or do you have any tips for people? Because I do think some people almost have a fear of entertaining, like it won't go well, or whatever they make or present won't be good enough. And do you have a tip or two on how you make it work seamlessly for you?
Well, I did have to sort of retrain myself. And I think, from one type A to another, we want everything to be perfect all the time. And some things can be, and some things need to be, whether it's my practice or my home, everything has to be clean and orderly and, all just be, but taking a deep breath and relaxing and enjoying it was a big step for me in learning not to be afraid of entertaining small groups or large groups. I also think the Barefoot Contessa helped me a lot because that was something actually we used to watch her show. And then when we watched television with my mother, and we'd watch, and, I think having gurus like the Barefoot Contessa can help to take the stress out of it, that sort of help you to have a roadmap to learn how to do things step by step. And then over time, as you lose that, and apprehension to get to off-road a little bit and experiment and get creative has been really fun.
Yeah.
But the base, knowing the basics always helps. So thank you, Barefoot Contessa, for that.
Yeah. Well, Ina Garten is one of my most favorite people. She's amazing, both in her recipes and her vibe, I would say. Mm-hmm. And I think her vibe is a very I love what you said, enjoy it. The one thing I will say is sometimes her recipes take a lot of time. So yes. Don't have to do all of her recipes. You could do one of her recipes and then you could fill in with either store-bought or other things, which is something I've learned over time.
Yes.
But I really, really love this idea that if you're not enjoying it, it's not going, you're not going to want to do it again. And mm-hmm. The point is really to connect with people. So mm-hmm. Make it, find a way for yourself where you can do it, entertain people and enjoy it. And then you'll get the benefits of the human connection that come along with it. Mm-hmm. Okay. Actually, two more questions. One is, do you have one or two top resources? They could be books or websites or courses that you can recommend to our listeners. It could be related to dermatology or just to life or something you love.
Well, I think I just said, the Barefoot Contessa cookbooks, but I think, it's hard to, I saw this question. I was thinking about it. There are just so many, I think, but I think there's not one in particular. I think that having the basic touchstones to structure. So I guess in my practice of dermatology, it would certainly be everything that's on our boards and that we learn in our training. But I really sort of like a home, like a bookshelf, where it's just, in my home at least, there are collections of books that are meaningful, photographs, small objects just accumulated over the years. And I really feel, and they come together, and I love arranging them and I love making it look beautiful. And I think that's how I go through life, is to really just try to take all of everything that you've ever experienced, whether it's Hawaii or Paris or North Carolina or San Francisco or any of it, and all of the the mentors that you shared, some wonderful memories from high school, the mentors that we had. I think I really draw on them day to day, and I suppose that is intentional as well.
Yeah. Okay. Last question. Mm-hmm. What do you do for yourself? Do you have a practice, a habit, a daily routine that you adhere to that either grounds you or brings you joy or relaxation, any of the above?
Well, my touchstones currently are time with my boys and time with my patients and staff. Those are sort of the two that I go between. And they really bring me so much joy. That's where I'm the happiest. In terms of, I do like my alone time too. And you know, I swim every morning. I do like to have cereal in bed. I love my bed, you know, things like that. And it's really cooking for my boys, enjoying their life and their sports, and just being a part of their growing up. And then with my patients, it's being a part of their health and wellness and lives as they go through. You know, it's wonderful now that I've been practicing long enough to have been, you know, seeing some of these patients from when they were teenagers to through their weddings with their children. And yeah, I mean, everyone's growing up, and that's really wonderful. So I guess that's a long answer to connecting, having connected time and having quiet time for myself.
Yeah, it's wonderful. Can you tell people where they can find out more about you and your practice?
We have a very limited website, but yes, our website is www.metropolitaninstitute.com.
Thank you so much. It's been so wonderful to spend time with you. Thank you for coming on the podcast, and I know we'll be talking soon.
Yes, it's a pleasure. Thank you so much, Ashley.
Thanks for joining On the Table with Ashley, where we'll meet individuals with thought-provoking perspectives from their varied life experiences and professions. On the Table will cover any topic you or I can put on the table with the goal of increasing curiosity, respect, and understanding while decreasing judgment, even when the issues discussed have sharp and contrasting viewpoints. On the Table also bridges to my company, Attend, which has started with the goal of helping people connect more meaningfully through straightforward, skillfully made, bespoke home goods. Check us out at ametend.com. That's ametendre.com, or on Instagram at ametend. And if you have ideas for future podcast episodes, shoot us an email at reachoutanytime@ametend.com. Thanks for listening.